Hello, everyone. Welcome. I'm Jeanette Bishops, and this is Performance Talks, an audio series featuring conversations I've had with artists, dancers, choreographers, curators, writers, archivists, photographers, and estate directors about performance and its afterlives. And today I'm speaking with writer and editor David Velasco. David was for many years editor-in-chief at Art Forum and is the editor of Modern Dance, a series of monographs exploring dance makers in the 21st century published by MoMA. And in this conversation, we talk about his early days as a dancer in the city of New York, why he started writing about dance, and the many ways text can relate to dance and performance. I hope you enjoy it.
So hi, David. Thank you again for taking the time to sit down with me today and talk about performance and dance. So I know you, of course, from your former role as editor-in-chief at Art Forum, but I really was introduced to your writing through the series of books that you edited on choreographers titled Modern Dance, published by MoMA. There are three books in this series on Ralph Lemon, Boris Karmetz, and Sarah Michelson. And it was really your publication on Sarah Michelson's work from this series that is really one of my favorite books. Reading it really made me want to like dive into the subject of writing about dance with you, because your writing was, again, like it was an introduction for me to her practice. I'd never seen her work, but your writing made the work come alive so vividly, and it made me really excited and curious. So I actually ended up going to all these archives at the Kitchen and a Walker Art Center to look at her work, as she and her work are like famously very much not online. You can't find anything. And you mentioned in your introduction of these books, or in Sarah Michelson's book, that you conceived the books as a way to offer living dance iconoclasts the same resources afforded the plastic arts. And, you know, that's kind of an ambition that I modestly kind of share as well with this performance talk series. And you describe a range of questions that arose while working on the series, one of them being, how does text relate to dance? It seems like you've been thinking a lot about movement and dance in relation to text. But I wanted to start in the beginning, and I did a little research on you because we don't really know each other personally. So I looked on your Instagram and I saw a really cute photo you posted a couple of years back where you're dancing as a little boy and you're like really in the moment. And I read some interviews with you, and in one of them you mentioned meeting partner or former partner on the dance floor, and you're dancing to the Beastie Boys, and he tells you something like, "I just, every dance floor I'm on, I want to have you on it." And he saves your name as David Dancer. And kind of seeing these like tidbits of your life really, yeah, give me a better sense of who you are as a person, and give me a better idea of like why you're so drawn to dance as a writer. But yeah, I was wondering if you can speak a bit more to that. Like, how, where did your interest in dance start?
Wow. You've really done your research. That's very, I'm touched. Thank you for doing this. And it's funny to be a subject. I'm so often, when I do things, I am, you know, I'm in your role, or I'm like the one who's trying to find out about people and their backgrounds and why they do things. So I'll see if I can reorient myself to actually being a subject for you. I've loved dance since I was a child. I've loved moving. And it's been a sort of natural thing for me forever. There's ways in which I can relate it to, you know, being gay, to being like mixed race Latino, to already like being on the outside of certain kinds of norms where you find yourself drawn to these spaces where other people like you collect. And when you do that, when you've form these kinds of spaces and groups, music and movement are sort of natural fits for holding that space and bringing people together. So, you know, in a more larger abstract way, I feel like it's not unrelated to some of the conditions of how I grew up. But, you know, it's also just a deeply felt thing. I like being in dance clubs. I like dancing. I can do it for hours, and I can do it by myself and with or without the help of substances, and it's just been a very natural thing for me. I didn't study dance particularly. I took some dance classes in college, but it wasn't a thing that I ever felt. I was never able to hold my body in those positions in a serious way. So I didn't pursue it. But when I moved to New York, I was friends with a woman named Kim Brandt. She's a choreographer and dancer, and she was very interested in all of these things. She worked at Dixon Place. We were both in our early 20s. We would go out dancing together. She would take me to dances quite a bit, and she was the one who actually introduced me to Sarah Mitchelson's work. So the Sarah Mitchelson book, she's one of the people I name in the book. She's one of the addressees. A lot of it was her. She put me in works very early on in New York. So I danced in small roles, but I danced at Performance Space. It was then PS 122, but Performance Space New York. I danced at a few venues with her. And so in that, I started to learn what it was like to actually make a work. Like, I understood, before I started writing about dance, I was in dances, rehearsing, watching people make them. And so I had, and I got a very natural understanding of like what it actually takes to make something, that it takes, you know, months or a year of incredibly devoted practice to actually make these things that will often appear once or twice or for a very short period of time. And I thought that was like very beautiful, and it's unlike many other art forms. You know, I mean, it's the space that these things exist in is so small, and the amount of work that can often go into them is so huge. I started to understand, I think, that finding ways to measure or account for that were important to me. And as I became more of a writer, or as I identified more as a writer, I decided that I wanted to figure out ways to track that meaningfully in what I was doing. I had an early time as a dancer in the city, again, not in any very official or formal capacity, but through friendships with people who did this.
What were the dances that you were a part of as a dancer?
So Kim made a piece called, it was called No Fail, that had an early premiere at this place called Williamsburg Art Exchange, WAX, in, I believe, 2003 or four. That space doesn't exist anymore. I don't know if there's any record even of this dance, but it was 40-minute long performance. I had a role. I can probably even still remember parts of the choreography, even though it was like 20-some years ago. And then there was a few other things that we did. I was in a piece called Dum Dum Bunny at the Kitchen in maybe 2006 or 2007, by a choreographer named Sam Kim. And I did a very short piece called Anthony Thomas with Kim Brandt and my then boyfriend Ryan McNamara at all these institutions have different names now, but it was then Dance Theater Workshop, now it's New York Live Arts, and that was like 2008 or something. So there was a few things like that. There might have been more, but those were the things that I remember that came to mind. They were like downtown dance, you know, they were all like very rehearsed. Like, we spent a lot of time in rehearsal, but not tied to any particular technique. You know, it's a strange group of people. It's the people who trained as dancers in various techniques end up in New York City doing odd jobs and not part of any company. And the kinds of things that they make together for these spaces that also aren't specifically tied to any technique or history. Yeah, they're these strange mutant dances that sometimes call downtown dance. We sometimes call contemporary dance. We sometimes call, I don't know, you know, like, and there's not like a great category for them. But to me, it's why New York is such a cool, essential laboratory for the invention of genres, is that there's all this activity that happens among people that's not formally organized in a recognizable way that, you know, that then produces its own afterlives, I guess. And I think that Sarah Mitchelson is very much in this universe, and she kind of, to me, was a lodestar for this kind of thing. And in the book, I was kind of trying to track what it would be like to talk about it more formally. And I, in the book, trace it a little more clearly to Cunningham, especially just because Cunningham's studio for many generations of dancers was sited in a place that made it accessible. It was a crucible through which a lot of different bodies passed. It was a common touchstone. And I think that in that way, even though Cunningham technique doesn't register across all of these different dances, I think it held space for a lot of different kinds of inventions in the form that I started to think of as downtown dance. Or not that I started to think of as downtown dance. It existed already as downtown dance, but that I tried to make a little more sense around. Yeah, I met my boyfriend we were together for 15 years or so, Ryan McNamara, on a dance floor at the Cock in 2004. And yes, his first words to me were, "I want to see you on every dance floor I'm on for the rest of my life." I was a very good club dancer. I still am. We connected over that. We went out a lot. We started a very long conversation. It's very fruitful. He is a performance artist, or he's an artist who deals more with performance in general. And I was just an academic. I went to school, for anthropology, and then I did a master's at NYU in humanities. I studied with like Avital Rennell and Derrida and some, just like brainy people, basically. And I had no idea what to do with this, but I assumed that I would do something in academia, actually, at the time. And meeting him, I kind of diverted that attention. I moved away from academia and I moved more toward art. And through a series of very, not fluke, but through a series of things that seemed unlikely, I ended up at Art Forum as an editorial assistant in 2005. And I just started writing a lot. I wrote about art constantly. I had no training in art. I didn't know anything about it, really. I just knew about it from my relationship. And I wrote tons of reviews. I wrote like social diary pieces. And that's actually important, I think. I wrote a lot of reportage. My early writing was mostly going to events and parties and reporting. So I was actually tuned in very closely to describing in detail what like an event was like.
I feel like that's also something that's not really happening anymore, capturing an event that's happening, like an art event.
Yeah, it was a very specific period in the art world where event culture was really amping up, partly because of art fairs becoming such a big deal. I think partly because of the way that the web was transforming writing. There was like more potential for immediate writing, more demand for immediate content. And so there was more pressure to actually produce event-style reportage. I just started doing that. It was a kind of a happy accident that I hit the art world at that time. And I think there's something about my training. I'm a bastard child in many ways. So I was trained as an academic in these high-intensity ways, and then I was immediately thrown into this other form of writing that was very journalistic, but at an institution that had kind of invented a certain kind of art criticism. So there was, I was situated at the nexus of these very different styles of writing. I just learned how to do that. At a certain point, I got sick basically of like covering all of these art fairs and parties. And I was like, this really feels detached from the things that actually hold meaning for me. They're fun. It's interesting. I didn't really have qualms about it, but I was feeling more and more alienated by the work. And I realized that the natural thing to do would be to try to turn toward the community that I felt like there wasn't a lot of writing about at that time. And that was the dance world. It was a world that didn't have a market behind it, still doesn't. And that also felt good to me because I'm just allergic to doing things for money. Unfortunately, that's been a real problem for me. But I was, I was like, this work felt like it was, it needed to be tracked. So the very first piece I wrote for the magazine, the very first feature I did for the magazine, it was what we called 1,000 words. It was like an as told to interview with Sarah Michelson. People didn't really know her work at that time. It was before she'd done anything. It's before she started doing her museum dances. This was like 2009, I think, 2010. And I had started seeing her work because Kim Brandt brought me to this piece, Daylight, at PS122, Performance Space New York. And I fell in love with it. I saw it two more times. I went and saw it, and I was completely blown away. I bought tickets again to go the next day. I was just like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. And I became obsessed. And when I had the chance to start doing things for the magazine, I thought, okay, well, there's this universe that I tuned into that doesn't have a space in the magazine, that the only meaningful writing being done about it is, you know, the New York Times actually had a pretty consistent dance review. I mean, for all my complaints about the Times, they did devote a fair amount of real estate to dance. And so they did a good job of articulating that world, but it was in a very journalistic, Timesy fashion. And I was like, this work deserves more than that. You know, it needs another dimension. And I started to think about how to do that. And somewhere around there, I decided to write this feature length piece about Sarah Mitchelson's work. So the origin of the book and part of the essay that comprises the spine of it had its first iteration in Art Forum. And that was around the Devotion series. And I can't remember exactly. I think that was still, again, before the museum dances occurred, because then she was in the Whitney Biennial, and that transformed the arc of her work. But so a lot of my writing about dance in general, I mean, I wrote about other people too, and was like, I wrote a piece about Anne Liv Young, who I was also really interested in. And I've written a fair amount about like Terrence Coe. But the main motivation for me was I kept encountering Sarah Mitchelson's work, and I was just in love with it. And I was like, this work is really challenging me to rethink how these things live, you know, what the afterlife of it can be. Because Sarah, she only makes work for the audience that's in the room. And she doesn't even believe that the work should or could live outside of that, energistically. And I think it's beautiful, actually. I think it's beautiful. I think she is an artist. It's actually exactly what she should be doing. But then it opened up the space for me to be like, I have a role then to play. I have to be the one to tell people about my experience with the work. Like, it gave me a role to play, you know, because she wasn't willing to consider it. So I read a lot of people to try to get a cue as to how to do it. You know, I read widely about, you know, there's many people who've written about performance, of course. I fell in love with Jill Johnston. She wrote for the Village Voice for many years. She was a dance writer. She basically gave Judson Dance Theater its first real champion. And her writing is so alive and so thoughtful that I kept thinking, how can I, like, not do what she's doing, but I was inspired by, like, the way that she stuck very closely to a dance. She described it in a way that was for, you know, a Village Voice audience. It was for an audience, but she also managed to, like, pull back in these very beautiful ways to give a broader view of, like, what it meant. So, yeah, to me, I started to see my responsibility as telling people about the experience of the work. And I mean, I was like, I want to connect the dots for people. I want to tell people why it's meaningful for me in the room, and then why it should matter outside of the room. And to do that, you have to, like, learn how to write vividly. You have to learn how to pay attention to specific details. You have to learn about the history of the form. You have to, like, not fall into the traps of just turning toward academic, the people who legitimate it in this academic world, but you can take the things that you've learned from that universe and, like, run it through it, you know, run it through the work, but, like, you can't just rely on it as the thing that then gives it meaning.
Yeah, because I think I was wondering about that difference, because you were writing a lot about more also, like, how you call it, like, plastic arts or, like, visual arts, and, like, kind of the process of developing your voice when it came to writing about dance. And again, because your voice is so distinct from, like, the other people that I've seen writing about dance, and it feels very personal, like, kind of vulnerable, but also very precise. And it's interesting that you say that you have such an academic background, because, again, I feel it's very accessible. I feel, yes, you do bring in maybe some theory, but not a lot. I feel like you really have your own way of accessing and describing the work. And so I wanted to kind of read a little bit of the piece that you wrote about Tournamento, which is like also a very famous work because like not a lot of people have seen it. She made it for the Walker Art Center in 2015. It was like a work that took place over 4 days and you got to see it. And I wanted to read like a little part of it because I feel like that really expresses like this visceral experience of witnessing dance and also struggle. So you write, "The music is perfect and the dancers are beautiful, but you're learning nothing new about the piece and you're suddenly filled with uncertainty. You have made a mistake. You leave the theater and you go to the parking lot where you sit in your rental car, not sure where else to go. Are you here just to prove that you're hardcore to earn your 20-hour badge? You want out of the mess of interpreting the work, of this overdetermined hide-and-seek, a tease and test to the acolytes. You pull yourself together and go back to the theater. You change your plane ticket and there is nowhere else to go. Believe or don't believe, whatever, this is what you're here for. And as much as you'd like to, you can't get away from your body, from these circumstances." So I think that part also like you can't get away from your body. And I feel like that's such an essential thing when you are a writer, just once write about dance. Like it's such a the involvement of like that time and space, your bodily investment almost. Like when it comes to viewing and accessing and writing about dance, how does that feel differently than when you're writing about like, let's say like a painting show that you also need to spend time with, but in a very different way?
I mean, I think that the gift of time-based work is that you can actually, if you're open to it, you can in real time reveal your actual experience with it. It's funny to hear it read to me. I haven't encountered that since I wrote it probably. But yeah, I mean, in that moment, I was like, I'm frustrated with this work. I'm over this work. I've like spent too much time with this work. I'm having such serious doubts. And rather than just like immediately try to like bury that, I'm like, well, this is my real-time experience of the work. That's important, actually. Let's account for it. Let's name it. Let's like bring it into the process. In that way, I'm kind of even mirroring what I was recognizing in the work. Like the work I loved was not just covering over these frustrations. It wasn't just trying to make everything neat and perfect. In that moment, I'm also seeing with Sarah's work, and I don't know how explicit I am about it there, but I was trying to like bring it back to what I also think she was doing, which was letting the frustrations emerge, like letting the things like appear as they appeared in the work. And so I'm just trying to like stay with the work, actually. And yeah, that's what's really wonderful about these kinds of durational performance works, is that if you want to write about it and be real with it, and I think that you should be authentic about your experience with it if you want to include your audience, if you want your audience to really come with you. Yeah, it's actually quite, it, in a way that it's not easy with more like, I guess, yeah, the plastic arts, as it were, such an old-fashioned term, but to demonstrate that experience, you know. It's funny that writing about performance can be so hard in certain ways because writing is also a time-based medium in so many ways. It unfolds over time, and so you have so many opportunities to actually do what the work you're witnessing is doing. So can be very different than writing about, say, a painting, where the tools you have for writing about a painting, it's a very different process.
Wow. Yeah, I think there's also like, it kind of ties to what I've been thinking a lot too, is about like memory and how memory is this is work and like it's creative work. And it's like carrying out like embodiment of retrieval. And it's like kind of a medium that also needs a carrier, like, or it needs a medium to be like trained and shared and transmitted, in which in your case is writing. And you have, you know, you describe in the piece also that you're carrying a notebook. How do you record the details of it, or like, and how do you remember the performances? Because also, again, like with Sarah, she is not someone who allows recordings, or I know there is a recording. I have actually seen it, but I had to go to the Walker and see it in the archive to get access to it. So how do you get yourself back to that space that you were in?
I take a lot of notes, but I also for some of her works, I did secretly record them, not on video, but I would have an audio recording. I would bring a tape recorder and I would record it, and then I would listen to it after the fact, and that would that would bring memories back if I needed to go there. Sometimes I would watch videos for Daylight, which I wrote about. I watched the video, the video that was up from the Walker, a lot, over and over again. And that, you know, it's a different life of the performance, but it lets you see things that you might not have seen the first time. So, you know, I'm not opposed at all to different kinds of recording techniques. I understand completely why choreographers don't want that to live in the world as the work, and why some of them are reluctant to share that kind of stuff, because it can be a very impure, to say the least, version of the work. But I think, at least for me, knowing that going in, knowing that it was impure, I knew what I was going to get from it. I knew what I was looking for. I didn't mistake it for the work itself. And that was, so yeah, those things can be incredibly useful tools as you're writing about something, if for no other reason than to like, just to even like rekindle a memory. One of the things that's interesting about the Sarah Mitchelson book, just to give a little quick backstory, the series came out of a conversation I had with Kathy Halbreich, who was at the time the associate director of MoMA. She was very favorable to her performance. She was the director of the Walker. She, I think, even brought Philip Byther into the Walker. And she knew Sarah's work from her time at the Walker. And Kathy and I were friends, are still friends. We were just having dinner one night, and I said, it's so sad to me that there's these people who make incredible dance, but there's not really serious scholarship about them. In the visual art world, you know, every artist can get a monograph, basically. You get like, you know, like artists who have barely had a career and they have like a monographic book about them. They have like different people writing about it. And I was like, it's just a shame that there's not the same kind of consideration for people who are at that level in the dance world. And Kathy was like, well, let's do it. She was just like, why not? Like, she had a bit of money that she could use for whatever she wanted, basically. She had a discretionary fund. And she was like, let's do some books. So then she asked me to pitch this series, and I brought together the idea of having a series with multiple monographs. I originally also wanted Steve Paxton to be in the mix, because there hadn't been, still isn't really, like a serious monograph of Steve's work. And of course, he really, I think, has earned it. And basically, by the time that the books were done, we were like out of money and I was out of steam and I had to do other things. I had a full-time job that was demanding my attention. And I knew that the Steve Paxton book would require, like, if I was to do it properly, would have been I would have had to like devote several years to really doing it. But in the meantime, we did a book with Ralph Lemon, a book with Boris Sharmatz, and a book with Sarah Mitchelson. Partly they were chosen because the performance curators at the time, Thomas Lax and Anna Yanevsky, the younger performance curators, I couldn't do all the books myself. And I loved Thomas, T. Jean Lax, and Anna. Thomas was familiar with Ralph, had worked with Ralph. Anna was working with Boris Sharmatz, and so it was a natural fit to bring them in that way. And Sarah and I started working on the book. Sarah did not want a book. She like was very definitively opposed to having a book. We had many conversations about why she didn't want a book.
Why was she opposed to it?
She was nervous that it would kill her work. She was like, I am terrified. She was terrified of the idea of her work existing in any way outside of the theater. We had many arguments about it. And I was like, look, this doesn't have to be your book. It's a book about my experience with the work. And that, I think, won her over. I mean, she already liked me. We had like a friendship. So she eventually was like, fine, this is about you. It's not about me. And I was like, that's great. It's just about me. But one of the interesting things that happened, I did a lot of research on images. And I think that the images of Sarah's work are some of the most beautiful dance images ever created. There's incredible, incredible imagery around them. So I was very excited to have a lot of photos in the book. And she very early on insisted that, she said, photos can't illustrate the text. And this is, of course, very much in line with how she thinks about things. She was just like, things should exist in and of themselves. She was like, the photos cannot be illustrative of the work. They should not be just something the text points to. I don't want the text to rely on the photos or the photos to rely on the text. And we tried to imagine a way in which photos could live in the book. There is a period of time when we thought maybe we could print out photos and individually have like one photo in each book, and we would stuff them in the book in this performative way. You know, we kind of tried to outline some way in which maybe photos could live in the book in their own universe. But we eventually realized that it wasn't going to be satisfying. And so the book became text only, which is, it's unique in the series in that way. And it's also, yeah, I kind of love Sarah for insisting that the text had to have its own life. And it also, I think, made me realize that if I was going to make it actually translate, that the text itself had to be vivid enough to carry the reader along with it, if I wasn't going to rely on photos.
Yeah, the director of MoMA mentions this also, like, in his introduction, like, saying, like, how you really evoked Mitchelson's uncompromising vision through, like, a constellation of voices and approaches to writing about dance. And, yeah, I was, like, really wondering how you went about that as an editor, too. Like, you invited Greg Zuccolo, who was dancing with Sarah for many years. You invited Ralph Lemon to write about her, who also worked with her during this dance program that he curated at MoMA 2012, Some Sweet Day. And through their writing, it's exactly what you just mentioned. Like, it's about their experience. They're very brutally honest about Sarah as a person and about her work. And I was just wondering, how did you go about, like, choosing these writers, and how did you go about the editing process?
These are great questions, and I really feel honored that you've, like, actually spent such time with it that you have. It's touching and meaningful to me. There's a few reasons for that. One of the reasons, I mean, I originally thought maybe I would just write the book myself. And of course, the main text in the book is a long, long essay that I wrote. But I also realized that just time-wise, I didn't have the stamina or the bandwidth to actually do that, to write a whole book myself. And I also realized that it just wouldn't be true to Sarah's world. But I wanted other voices to be there because I think the point I was trying to make with the book was how critical audience is, and an audience also being people you work with and alongside, especially with Sarah. So I wanted there to be the voices of different kinds of audience members. So Greg Zuccolo, who had danced with her from like very early years, Gia Corliss, who was one of like her principal critics and audiences at the Times and at Time Out. Ralph Lemon, who was a curator of her work, but also a friend, like people who like really knew dance and also who had strong voices. You know, I mean, Ralph Lemon is a beautiful writer, and that was a huge reason why I wanted him in there also. And Claude Wampler, who was another person who worked more in visual arts, who had collaborated with Sarah. So I wanted to give a fuller picture of who her colleagues were, who her audience was, the world that she was a part of. Because to me, the exciting thing about a lot of performance, but Sarah in particular, is the way it's building a world, both in its making and in its reception. And so I wanted to like give a better portrait of that through the book. You know, and I just commissioned and edited it like I would, you know, anything. I thought through who I wanted to do it. I chose people who I knew could write, and I chose people who were in touch with Sarah's work in a very visceral way, who really loved the work, and who would be honest about it. Also, I just let them have their reign. I just told them, do what you want, more or less, and they brought what they did.
I think also, like, this also ties to, like, one of the other things that I was, like, wondering about, what you write about, too, in this same piece about Tournamento, where you're thinking about who you are as a writer. Am I an essayist? Am I a critic? Am I an insider? Am I a spectator? And I was like thinking about this too. And I was like writing the other people's pieces too. Like, what is the role that they're taking in this?
Well, actually, I did give them some instruction, if I remember correctly. It's been a while since I worked on this. Basically, I was like, I knew that I would start with a specific kind of like area of the work. But I wanted people to be able to speak to a few different things. So I asked Greg and Gia to write about things I hadn't seen, basically, that I knew I couldn't write about. And Ralph, I guess, kind of gave carte blanche. Because I think Gia was, you know, because she's a reporter, she had a very strict mode of approach. And I think she wanted more guidance, actually, because she was used to having a form that she was delivering to. Greg and Ralph, I think, were just easier in the sense that, like, they were open to, they don't write regularly for any sort of places. And I think in that way, there's something, you know, I'm always really attuned to the, in that book and anywhere, to me, like, the most, one of the most important things you can think of as a writer, learn as a writer is, it's like, who is in your mind as you're writing, basically. And it's the same, you know, like when you're making dances, you know, and this is a lot of the argument of Sarah, about my book, about the Sarah book, is who's in your mind when you're making the dances. But when you're writing also, when you're editing also, like who do you have in mind? Do you have your editor at the Times? You know, if your editor is your audience, that can be really tricky. I don't know. I'm going to get a little like goopy here, but it's like you have to figure out what frequency you're tuning into, you know, and having a specific person or set of persons in mind. You're in many ways, your work is only as good as your audience and the audience you're imagining. And if you can trick yourself into imagining an audience that is going to be receptive to your best creative self, you're going to like get really great work. And I think that's the way it is with almost any medium. And with the Sarah Mitchison book, I was doing a lot of work to try to imagine an ideal audience for it. That wasn't institutional, that wasn't just like bureaucratic, that wasn't like the people at MoMA, that wasn't like the people writing the checks, that was in fact hoping for an audience that would that hadn't even maybe yet emerged, but that would someday find the book, like you, and find a reason to want to engage it. And I think that's a tricky thing when you're inviting people to write. And I found this all the time at the magazine, trying to find a way to say, if you're writing to me, for me, that's great. And I want to be not like a barrier to, I want to be the best audience I can be for you. A good editor is one who can not get in the way of the work, who cannot say, you need to hit these particular bureaucratic points, you know. I'm not trying to impress anybody else at this institution. I'm just a portal to this audience that exists out there. Sorry, this is maybe a little too like abstract, but who you're writing toward and the spirit in which you write is actually, I think, the most important part of writing. And it's the most important part of making anything. So I was trying to like perform that in different ways in the book, I guess, both as a writer and as an editor.
How do you feel about responsibility or the role of the writer when it comes to performance? Because I've just said that I've spoken to a lot of curators, and what comes up a lot too is that a lot of curators don't really feel they have time even to like write. Like Philip Bider, for example, he has the YouTube series, which is amazing, where he does these interviews with I think almost all of the artists that he works with. But he also mentioned like, I would love to write more essayistic pieces about this, so I just don't have the time. I'm also not sure if curators are the best people to be writing about this. I do know, like, from my experience, you do get to know the work in a very deep way often. What are your thoughts about that? Like, who are the best writers, perhaps, to be writing about performance?
It can be anyone. There are some curators who write very beautifully. Catherine Wood has written very beautifully about performance. Elena Filipovic has written very beautifully. There's many others, I'm sure, that I would think of if I thought hard about it. But it's true, I think, that often a curator, because their role is to create the institutional arena for work, their mind is not always connected to the right points for its reception. They're there to create a space for an artist to work in, and it's just a different attitude toward the work. And I think that can be really hard sometimes to build a bridge to thinking about it in terms of other audiences, basically, to writerly audiences. But it's not impossible. People do it. But it's not as natural a fit as I think people would think often. Rosalie Goldberg started out as a writer before becoming a curator. And I think that, there's people who manage to do this, but it's actually quite tricky because you really have to change your orientation. And that can require really lifting yourself out of the way you've been approaching it. And you have to fully realign, and you have to understand what it takes to realign.
Your publication on Sarah Mitchell's is one of my favorite works about dance. I was just wondering what to you are writings that stand out for you, inspired you, maybe also in the beginning, how you told me that you were kind of reading a lot of other people who are writing about dance or performance.
I have to say, again, thank you for reading and seeing the book. And it's very moving to me because, when the books first came out, there wasn't, I think because of when they came out and what I was doing at the time, we didn't do launch parties. We didn't really do anything to promote the books whatsoever. I was exhausted by the end of the process, and I was becoming the editor of Artform, and I just had, my brain was elsewhere. So in some ways I was worried that they just would get lost in the mix, but the books were very important to me. And I've heard both from you and actually from some people in their 20s, young dancers, that the Sarah Mitchelson book has been really meaningful to them. And it makes me think, okay, maybe it's finding its audience, and that's so wonderful. It didn't necessarily find its audience at the time for all sorts of reasons. And it's cool to me that it's maybe that there are people who are connecting with it now. It makes me feel really good. The people I was reading at the time, Jill Johnston, I mentioned, incredible, incredible, incredible dance critic. Her book, Marmalade Me, is unbelievable. And everybody should get a copy and read it. It's just an incredible body of writing. I loved reading Yvonne Rainer on her work. Yvonne is one of those artists who can write very beautifully about her own work. In particular, her book that was republished by Primary Information, Work 1961 to 1973, has some beautiful writing in it. And the final essay in which she writes about her relationship with Cunningham, brings me to tears every time I read it. Claudia LaRocco was somebody who was a reporter at the Times who I started working with quite a bit. And we shared a certain passion for trying to refigure writing in dance. That was, it was very important to be in conversation with her. Claudia's such a beautiful writer. Jennifer Krasinski is another person who writes about performance, and I've read quite a bit of her. In these are contemporaries. Some of them are oh my God, what's his name? Very classic poet, poet and dance person. Wait. Edwin Denby wrote beautifully about dance in the mid 20th century. And I loved to read, a poet who wrote about dance. Ralph Lemon writes about dance very beautifully. Douglas Crimp actually was a really important one. And a lot of the writing I was doing at that time was in pretty direct conversation with Douglas, who wrote a very beautiful piece about Cunningham and Cunningham's events for Art Forum in the year before I think I wrote my Sarah Mitchelson piece. Douglas is a writer who was able to really bridge very big ideas about things with very granular attention to detail, and I took a lot of cues from him. And like, he was somebody who was very critical for me as I wrote. I did read people who were writing about dance and performance, but I also read just people who are great writers. You know, to me, it's like, it's if you're reading great novels, if you're reading great criticism, if you're reading the stuff that inspires you, you know, I mean, kind of like a very like obvious choice, but like Joan Didion, you know, people who like have like very incredible attention to like really rich detail and storytelling, you try to get them in your head a little bit and see how they were doing things. And you're trying to tell a story with as much honesty as you can and showing your perspective and relationship to it without making yourself the center of it. And there's a lot of people who do that in many different forms. So I think it was also important to me like to not silo myself in one kind of place. I wanted to like learn as much as I could about the history of dance. So I read a lot of dance history. I read, oh my God, what's her name? So incredible, but she wrote the really pioneering stuff about Judson, Sally Baines. I read as widely as I could the different histories of dance. I read, you know, Cunningham has like a archive book written by the archivist for the Cunningham Foundation, David Vaughan. You know, I read everybody. I wanted to like situate it correctly. Also in the work of Balanchine and the work of, you know, whatever you learn. But when the writing, when it came down to the writing and translating it for an audience, I actually tried to like not stick to the typical dance writing. I wanted to get a flavor and a voice that would be open and accessible to like people outside of it. I wanted people who didn't know about dance to be interested.
Even if the series at MoMA is will not continue, that was also one of my questions. I was wondering if there's going to be more than three books, but I do hope that it's not going to be the last publication about dance that we're going to see from your hand.
It's possible that it could wake up again at MoMA. I'm not opposed to that, and I think that there could be even interest there, but. You know, essentially when I became editor of the magazine, anything I was doing outside of it, I didn't have time for. So part of it was that the budget for the series ran out at that time. And also part of it was that I had a position that took over my life. But I still think it's an incredible series. And I still think it's an incredible, it's an important idea. It's so critical, these people who, for performance, which is such a, I mean, it's underfunded, it's ephemeral, it's like such a powerful form, but the tools for how, you know, bringing that to life after the fact or to translating that for people who weren't there or who might want to fund it in the future, who might want to like commission stuff, there's just such limited tools. Yeah, it's very important work to connect the dots. So what you're doing is like so critical. Like it's a fragile medium. It demands serious champions to continue. So I think it would be really cool if MoMA wanted to continue, and maybe we haven't talked about it. It's possible. I know the people there, you know, Thomas and Anna, you're still there, and I adore them. It could be a good time to rekindle something like that.
I think it'll be a good time.
Hadn't really thought about it until recently, so maybe.
Yeah, it was so great to talk. I read that you're writing a book now. Can you say something about that already, or is that still kind of like something in process?
It's in process, but I can say that it's more memoiristic, and it deals more with the life of writing, and it's a memoir about some time in the art world. I hope that it will actually touch a lot of different universes, but it's not like fully, yeah. I hope that it will not be easy to describe, actually. So, but I'm writing something that is more from life. Oh,
I'm excited to hear that you're writing, and I'm excited to read it.
I'm excited to read it also, because that means it's
me. Yeah.
So, thank you so much for doing this.